killing time, waiting for a meeting to get started, waiting for a phone call, and so forth. We also see this type of eating in our overworked clients. They feel they must always be doing something, being productive. The moment a tiny hole opens up in their schedule, they feel the need to fill it, often with food. It's acceptable to eat, but not to rest. Bribery and reward. Have you ever promised yourself that you could have a treat once you've finished writing a term paper, or a contract, or cleaning the house? If so, you have experienced reward eating. It's not unusual to use food as a motivation to accomplish undesired tasks. For example, children are bribed with treats such as candy or ice cream if they behave, at a mall, for a babysitter, and so on. People often reward themselves for working hard, at work, at home, or at school, with an extra bagel or a muffin, for example. Using food as a reward can be self-perpetuating, as there will always be ongoing tasks and challenges which can be made more tolerable if they're mitigated by food gifts. Excitement. Food and the eating experience itself can serve as a way to add excitement when life begins to feel dull. At a subtle level, planning a special meal or making a reservation at a favorite restaurant can create a sense of excitement. The notion of going on a diet can trigger excited feelings of hope. This is one of the reasons that dieting is so alluring. Our clients talk of how even contemplating a new diet gives them a rush of adrenaline, just imagining a new body and new life. When the diet fails, the excitement is replaced with despair. At this point, the experience of going to the store to buy large quantities of forbidden foods can be one way to recreate the excitement. And then the cycle continues. Diet, overeating, diet, overeating. This is exciting, but at what cost? Soothing. It's not hard to understand the soothing power that food can provide. It can be more appealing to go to the kitchen for cookies and milk than to sit on the couch and experience uncomfortable feelings. This is especially true if those cookies and milk remind you of a time that was pleasant and life felt less complicated. Habitually eating to soothe what ails you can evolve into a problem with food. Food can have other symbolic meanings of comfort. Ellen is a 16-year-old who has battled with her father since she was a small child. She describes him as mean and nasty, with a bitter personality. It was not surprising to hear Ellen talk about her obsession with eating large amounts of candy every day as a way to bring sweetness into her life. To her, the sweets countered the bitterness of her daily experiences with her father. Love. Food can become connected to the feeling of being loved. There is certainly a romantic link with food. Chocolate on Valentine's Day is a classic example. When dating, there's an unspoken ground rule that your relationship is elevated to a more intimate level when you have experienced a home-cooked meal for two. Clients frequently tell of how their parents' only way to show love was through food. Their parents may not have been able to show physical attention or speak to them in loving ways, but food was always plentiful. Frustration, anger, and rage. If you find yourself going through a bag of hard and crunchy pretzels when you're not hungry, it's a good bet that you may be feeling frustrated or angry. The physical act of biting and crunching can serve as a way to release these feelings for some people. One client, Nancy, a lawyer, discovered that she had a habit of subduing her anger at some of her clients by grabbing some hard food, whether it was carrots or crackers, and munching away. Stress. Many of our clients say they head for the nearest candy bar under stressful times. Yet in most individuals, biological mechanisms associated with stress turn off the desire to eat. The rush of adrenaline during stressful times sets in motion a cascade of biological events to provide immediate energy. As a result, blood sugar is elevated and digestion is slowed. These two elements alone tend to suppress hunger and heighten the sense of satiety when eating. The biological reactions are a form of self-preservation to ready our bodies for fight or flight. While this was quite useful for survival in an acute situation, fighting off a man-eating tiger or fleeing from danger required immediate energy. A growing body of research suggests that in our modern day, this mechanism may actually contribute to obesity when it becomes chronic. It may be stressful to fight off rush hour traffic or to flee from a deadline, but you don't need the extra blood sugar that the stress reaction provides. Chronic stress also raises cortisol, which is a steroid hormone produced by the adrenal gland and secreted into the bloodstream. Prolonged higher levels of cortisol can increase abdominal fat, which is associated with a greater amount of health problems. These biological problems are only compounded if you cope with stress by eating. Studies have also shown that people who have been dieting are especially vulnerable to overeating during stressful times. Stress becomes one more reason to blow the diet. Dieting itself can also be a source of stress. Anxiety. Worries of any magnitude, from an upcoming final to waiting to hear if you got the job, can trigger an urgent need to eat to relieve anxiety. Sometimes generalized anxiety can be described as that uncomfortable feeling that you are unable to put a finger on. Our clients say it feels like butterflies in your stomach. With a focus on the stomach, so goes the food. Mild depression. It's not uncommon for many people to turn to food when they are mildly depressed. In mild depression, weight gain is often seen, especially in dieters. In one particular study, 62% of the dieters and 52% of non-dieters stated they ate more when feeling depressed. Being connected. The need to feel part of a group or to feel a connection to others can be very powerful for some people, and can even affect how and what they eat. This experience was poignantly described by Matthew when he was talking about the dinner he had eaten one night with some friends. Although he didn't like the food served, he ate it anyway. He made the choice to feel connected but dissatisfied with the food rather than feeling different. How many times have you eaten to be part of the crowd? From running up to get ice cream to sharing a pizza. Loosening the reins. Frequently, clients who are highly successful in every aspect of their lives, except in their eating, discount their accomplishments. They feel as if their food problems indicate they are truly failures in life. We have found that in most cases, overeating is the only mechanism that such a person has for letting go and letting loose of the tight reins of control in his or her life. A good example is Larry, a wealthy businessman who is the chief executive officer of a large business. He dresses impeccably, keeps his car perfectly washed and waxed, and lives in a beautifully decorated house in an affluent neighborhood. He maintains rigid discipline with his children and has high expectations for his wife as well. He never drinks or uses drugs. He keeps perfect records of his household finances. And he has an immaculate appointment book that maintains his punctuality. Larry's only outlet from his self-imposed militaristic control is overeating. It is his way of letting out some steam. Coping with emotional eating. Whether your response to emotional hunger is mild emotional eating or out-of-control binging, there are four key steps to making food less important in your life. Ask yourself, 1, am I biologically hungry? If the answer is yes, your next step is to honor your hunger and eat. If you are not hungry, answer the following question. 2. What am I feeling? When you find yourself reaching for food when there is no biological hunger, take a time out to find out what you are feeling. This is not such an easy question to answer, especially if you are not in touch with your feelings. Try the following. Write out your feelings. Call a friend and talk about the feelings. Talk about the feelings into a tape recorder. Just sit with the feelings and experience them if you can. Talk to a counselor or a psychotherapist. 3. What do I need? Many people eat to fulfill some unmet need, which is related to the emotional or physical feeling being experienced. If you are a chronic dieter, you can be particularly vulnerable. Eating to assuage an unmet need can be used as an excuse to eat. Here is a simple example. Molly is a freelance writer who was working into the wee hours to meet her deadline. Around 3 o'clock in the morning, she found herself walking downstairs into the kitchen. She realized that she was not hungry, yet she was about to devour a bowl of ice cream. When Molly asked herself what she was feeling, she discovered frustration, exhaustion, and a sense of being brain dead. She realized that she was trying to feed both her fatigue and her frustration. But what she really needed was rest. No amount of food would replace sleep. She decided to call it a night and go to bed. But before Molly made that decision, she told herself she could have the ice cream tomorrow if she still wanted it. She also realized the ice cream would taste better if she experienced it fully awake rather than half asleep. The next day, Molly finished her story and had no desire for the ice cream. She removed the need. 4. Would you please? It's not unusual to find that when you ask the question, "What do I need?" the answer can be found simply by speaking up and asking for help. Laurel Mellon, innovator of the successful Shape Down weight management program for families, has found that overweight kids often have trouble speaking up for their needs. We also find this to be true for many of our clients. The "would you please" step originated from Laurel Mellon's work, and we find it extremely helpful for our clients. Danielle, a full-time stay-at-home mom, learned that she was using food as a momentary timeout. Eating was her only retreat between baby cries. Danielle discovered that what she needed was not food, but time just for herself. To obtain this, she used the "would you please" step. She asked her husband to give her 30 minutes of uninterrupted quiet time after he came home from work. Having gained this, food was no longer important. Meeting your needs without food. There are various ways in which we learn to handle the unending emotions that life can trigger. Some people learn from early on that it's okay to express their feelings or to ask for a hug. Others aren't lucky enough to be taught how to take care of themselves in productive, nurturing ways. The first task in learning how to cope without using food is to acknowledge that you are entitled to having your needs met. But basic needs are often discounted, including getting rest, getting sensual pleasure, expressing feelings, being heard, understood, and accepted, being intellectually and creatively stimulated, receiving comfort and warmth. Seek nurturance. Feeling nurtured can allow you to feel comfort and warmth, so that food loses its number one position in this role. There are many routes and avenues available for nurturing yourself and receiving nurturing from others. Rest and relax. Take a sauna or a jacuzzi. Listen to soothing music. Take time to breathe deeply. Learn to meditate. Play cards with friends. Take a bubble bath in candlelight. Take a yoga class. Get a massage. Play with your dog or cat. Develop a network of friends. Ask friends for hugs. Buy yourself little presents. Put fresh flowers in your house. Spend time gardening. Get a manicure, pedicure, facial, haircut, etc. Buy a teddy bear and hug it. Deal with your feelings. If you receive a steady flow of comfort and nurturing, you'll be better prepared to face the feelings that have been so frightening. Acknowledge what is troubling you. Allow your feelings to come up. This will reduce your need to push them down with food. Here are some suggestions of how to deal with your feelings. Write your feelings in a journal. Call a friend or several. Talk about your feelings into a tape recorder. Release anger through pounding a pillow or a punching bag. Confront the person who is triggering your feelings. Let yourself cry. Breathe deeply. Sit with your feelings and discover how the intensity will diminish with time. If you have trouble identifying your feelings or coping with them, it may be helpful to talk with a therapist, especially if it is a persistent issue. Find a different distraction. Many people use food as their primary distraction from their feelings. It's okay to get away from the feelings from time to time, but you don't have to use food as an excuse. Many teenagers tell us that they come home from school every afternoon and plop in front of the TV with a bag of chips and a soda. When asked why they do this, they say that they're avoiding the boring feelings of having to do their homework. When it's suggested that they first have a snack to take care of their biological hunger and then watch some TV to distract themselves for a while before settling down to homework, they exclaim that their parents would never let them. As long as they're eating, they can legitimately procrastinate from homework, but having other distractions is not allowed. This is also true for many workaholic clients. It's socially acceptable to take a time out to eat, coffee break, but to just sit at the desk, even while entitled to a break, is not allowed. They fear that it will appear as if they are doing nothing. Others use food to distract themselves from loneliness, fear, and anxiety. Since it would be overwhelming to try to feel your feelings 24 hours a day, give yourself permission to take a break from them for a while. Take the assertive stance of distracting yourself in an emotionally healthy way. Try the following. Read an absorbing book. Rent a movie. Talk on the telephone. Go to the movies. Take a drive. Clean out your closet. Put on some music and dance. Peruse a magazine. Take a stroll around the block. Work in the garden. Listen to an audio novel. Do a Sudoku or a crossword puzzle. Work on a jigsaw puzzle. Play with a computer. Take a nap. How emotional overeating has hurt and helped. As you begin to examine your use of food as a coping mechanism, it's helpful to take a look at how food has actually helped you. The notion that overeating can have benefits may sound crazy to you, especially if you're feeling distressed by this behavior and your weight. But if there were no upside to overeating, you probably wouldn't continue it. Take a piece of paper and divide it in half. On one half, make a list of how using food serves me, and cite all the benefits you receive from overeating. Title the other side, How Using Food Disserves Me, and examine the ways in which food has become harmful or destructive to you. How using food serves me. It tastes good. It's reliable. It's always there. It keeps me from feeling bored. It soothes me. It numbs my bad feelings. How using food disserves me. My cholesterol is high. My clothes don't fit. I'm uncomfortable walking and exercising. I feel overfull and uncomfortable. I'm numbed to the joys of life. As you look over your list, you might be surprised to learn that the use of food is not just a negative experience for you. In fact, it may give you some valuable perks. But if you're feeling bad and guilty about using food to cope, it will be hard for you to recognize that its benefits may equalize its burdens. By recognizing that there are indeed some benefits to using food, You'll begin to own your eating experience rather than feeling out of control. When food is no longer important. Many clients have talked about having strange, uncomfortable feelings when they're no longer using food to cope with their emotions. At the same time, they're feeling happy and secure in their new intuitive eating style and have stopped struggling with food in their bodies. There are a couple of reasons for the conflicting feelings. You no longer have the benefits of using food. While coping with food can be destructive, one client noted that on tough days she knew she could always go home to her chocolate. Now, instead, she's stuck with experiencing her feelings. You might even need to go through a grieving period for the loss of food as comforter and companion. You may also notice that you're experiencing your feelings in a deeper, stronger way. Since you're no longer covering them up with food, they may have a profound effect on you. This is a point at which some people decide that it would be helpful to get counseling as a way to process these long-buried feelings. Sandy is a client who experienced the loss of using food as a coping mechanism. By acknowledging what food used to do for her, as well as against her, Sandy was able to understand that her uncomfortable feelings were normal and appropriate. Sandy had either dieted or used food to cope all of her life. She talked about feeling very frustrated when she would stop eating after finding the threshold bite and truly not wanting any more food. She knew that she'd had enough, didn't want to feel uncomfortable by eating more, yet felt unhappy that she wouldn't be able to continue to have the taste sensations that the food provided. She also talked about feeling angry that she no longer had food to turn to when she was feeling bad. Eating isn't as exciting as it used to be when Sandy would restrict and then overeat. Soon, however, after mourning the loss of being able to use food, she was able to leave these feelings behind and feel mainly the exhilaration of being an intuitive eater who copes without using food. A strange gift. You may go for a long time without using food to cope, when all of a sudden emotional eating catches you by surprise. If this occurs, it's not a sign of failure or that you've lost ground. Instead, it's a strange gift. Overeating is simply a sign that stressors in your life at that moment surpass the coping mechanisms that you have developed. Some of these stressors are divorce, a job change, a move to a new city, the death of someone close, marriage, or the birth of a child. These may be new or unexpected experiences for you. As a result, you haven't had the opportunity to develop coping skills to deal with them. So you revert back to eating as the familiar way to take care of yourself. Overeating can also occur when your lifestyle becomes unbalanced with too many responsibilities and obligations, with too little time for pleasure and relaxation. Consequently, food is used to indulge, escape, and relax, albeit so briefly. When you find this happening, it may be a signal for you to reevaluate your life and find ways to put more balance into it. If you don't make these necessary changes, food remains important by filling an unmet need. In both of these situations, overeating becomes a red flag to let you know that something isn't right in your life. Once you truly appreciate this, eating will not feel out of control. Rather, it's an early warning system. Recognize how lucky you are to have this mechanism to alert you that something is out of kilter in your life. At first, our clients think this notion is a bit absurd until they realize the truth behind it in their own lives. Those people who have never had an emotional eating problem often have no ostensible warning of excess stress in their lives. If you can see that your eating problem can have benefits as well as negative effects, you won't get into a pattern of self-defeating behaviors that become destructive and difficult to reverse. Using food constructively. Once you learn new ways of coping, think about how food can continue to nurture you in a constructive way. You have a right to feel good, and that means not just not feeling stuffed, but also feeling satisfied with your food choices, being healthy now, and reducing future health risks. Your relationship with food will become more positive as you begin to let go of food as a coping mechanism and bring it into your life as a non-threatening, pleasurable experience. In Chapter 14, we discuss how you can eat healthfully without falling back into the diet mentality. But first, you need to learn how to respect your body and appreciate how it feels when you include movement in your life. Chapter 12, Principle 8, Respect Your Body. Accept your genetic blueprint. Just as a person with a shoe size of 8 would not expect to realistically squeeze into a size 6, it is equally futile and uncomfortable to have the same expectation about body size. But mostly, respect your body so you can feel better about who you are. It's hard to reject the diet mentality if you are unrealistic and overly critical about your body shape. Body vigilance begets body worry, which begets food worry, which fuels the cycle of dieting. So what do? Just forget it? Crawl into a dark cave, hide from the world, and eat everything in sight? No. But as long as you are at war with your body, it will be difficult to be at peace with yourself and food. For every disparaging glimpse in the mirror, the food police gain power. And with that comes vows of just one more diet. Has all the self-loathing because of your body helped? Has dwelling on your imperfect body parts helped you to become leaner or merely make you feel worse? Does chewing yourself out every time you step on the scale make your weight any less? We have yet to find one client who says that focusing on his or her body in such negative ways is helpful. Studies have shown that the more you focus on your body, the worse you feel about yourself. Yet the body torture game goes on. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the slimmest of them all? It's hard to escape the body torture game when the whole country is playing it. In the name of fitness, a lean and hard shape has become the body icon for modern times. Self-proclaimed fitness gurus insist that you can sculpt your body as if it were a lump of clay, that you can change your genetic shape with an aerobic huff and puff. We are ardent advocates of being fit and recognize the health benefits of exercise, but we feel we must point out where unrealistic expectations are being painted. It is widely accepted in the research community that you cannot spot reduce. Lose fat in just one specified place. So how could it be that you can simply sculpt your body by working on certain body parts? Yes, you can build specific muscles through strength and resistance training. Yes, you can lose overall body fat through aerobic exercise. But you cannot personally select where that fat will be lost. It's possible, therefore, to build muscle underneath fat layers, but this is not the concept of body sculpting that most have in mind. Most clients we speak with take body sculpting classes in hopes of chiseling off the fat. The fashion world has also shaped the ideal look for women into various versions of thin, from the 60s Twiggy figure to the waif look first embodied by supermodel Kate Moss. Even the full-bodied fashion look turns out to be too thin by medical standards. When clothing giant Guess hired model Anna Nicole Smith, she made headlines in the fashion and news media because she was big. Her weight was actually in the lower range of ideal, according to 1990 U.S. height and weight charts. If a normal weight is considered big, what does that say to the average woman? This hardly fosters realistic body shape expectations. If the ideal body type for women is sandwiched between the spandex fitness look and fashionable waifness, most bodies don't stand a chance. No wonder body satisfaction has become the norm in this country. Repeatedly, we seem to be sold the message, if they could do it, you can do it. Just try harder. After all, even if you are lean, you could still be leaner. With such standards, it's no wonder that women, and increasingly men too, are at war with their bodies. Whether you are male or female, fat is considered the enemy. There is no doubt that there are unrealistic pressures to be thin with contributions from the media, advertisers, fashion industry, beauty industry, and on and on. We could groan and point fingers at the causes leading to increasing body dissatisfaction. Yes, there is a myriad of cultural factors that lead to unrealistic body expectations. But we want to get past the cause and effect analysis and instead focus our energy on how you can get past body vigilance. Besides, plenty of good books have been written on this topic. Body image. A waist is a terrible thing to mind. Most of our clients are adept at being overly critical or hating their bodies, and putting an end to body worry and self-loathing is no easy task. Most of us have trouble accepting a compliment, let alone the idea of accepting our bodies. We have found that the notion of accepting your body was too far of a stretch to our clients as a beginning point. They fear that if they accepted their current body size, it would mean complacency, giving up, and getting even bigger. It's one thing to lose the battle of the bulge, they'd say, but to totally give up would mean ultimate failure. At least there's honor and dignity in continuing the fight. Our clients also argued that embracing the notion of body acceptance felt hypocritical. After all, the reason they sought our help is because they did not accept their current body. They wanted a change. What a paradox. Our experience has shown us that if you're meant to get to your natural ideal weight, you need to loosen up on yourself, put weight loss on the back burner, and treat your body with respect. Remember, repeated diets and a disparaging attitude toward your body have not helped. It's part of what got you to where you are right now. When you are caught in the I hate my body mindset, it's all too easy to keep delaying good things for yourself, waiting until you have a body that you think is more deserving. But that day never comes, especially when your standards are unreachable. So you put off treating yourself better. Many aspects of your life literally get weighted down. I'll join the health club after I lose 10 pounds. I'll go on a special vacation after I reach my goal weight. I'll start going out with my friends when I just get some of this weight off. And so the empty promises go, and life gets a little emptier during these times. Body image expert and psychologist Judith Roden notes in her book, Body Traps, you don't need to lose weight first in order to take care of yourself. In fact, the process actually happens quite in the reverse. We also have found that if you are willing to make weight loss a secondary goal and respecting your body a primary goal, it will help move you forward. We are not saying disregard your body. We are urging you instead to respect and appreciate it. This does not mean that you throw in the towel. This does not mean that you should disregard your health. In fact, respecting your body means taking care of your health. There is a growing movement that shifts the focus to health rather than to weight. It's called Health at Every Size, HAES. Instead of focusing on numbers, weight, the emphasis is on healthy living and behaviors. For example, physical activity is vital for health, for everyone. Yet lean people may conclude that they have no reason to be physically active, since their body weight is considered to be normal. Respecting and appreciating your body is the beginning of making peace with your body and your genetics. It is probably the most difficult thing that you will do. If you could place your priorities on making peace with your food and body, becoming an intuitive eater, it will allow you to loosen up. Otherwise, it will be a constant tug of war. It's normal to feel panicky when thinking about respecting your body, but by doing so, it will allow you to go through the intuitive eating steps much more easily. Ironically, we observe a marked difference in our clients who are able to respect their bodies versus those who are not. Those who are able to get to a place of respect for their bodies have more patience for the intuitive eating process. This patience allows them to explore further and move forward quicker. Those who have trouble respecting their bodies often find themselves in conflict. When they feel loathsome toward their bodies, they struggle with an intense desire to diet and just get the weight off. Then they vacillate with intermittent feelings of peace when working through the intuitive eating process. It is those moments of peace that give them hope, however, to continue intuitive eating. Why respect? We choose the word respect as a launching point for working through your body issues. It's a tough place to begin for most of our clients. Just keep in mind these points, which will ease you into the idea of body respect. You don't have to like every part of your body to respect it. In fact, you don't have to immediately accept where your body is now to respect it. Respecting your body means treating it with dignity and meeting its basic needs. Many of our clients treat their pets with more respect than their own bodies. They feed them, take them out for walks, and are kind to them. Finally, if you are someone who has used food as a way to cope with your emotions over a lifetime, your present body shape may be representative of the way you took care of yourself when you knew no other way. Rather than demeaning the results of this coping mechanism, respect yourself for surviving. Respecting your body is a critical turning point in becoming an intuitive eater. It's not easy. Our culture has a built-in bias against large body sizes while placing a premium on appearance. It's important to recognize that these biases exist because it may seem like you are a salmon swimming up against the cultural norm. After all, it's all around us in both subtle and blatant forms. From the thin actresses in diet soft drink ads to glaring magazine covers such as a cover from an issue of People magazine's Diet Winners and Sinners of the Year. Here's the skinny on who got fat, who got fit, and how they did it. It takes a conscious effort to move away from this societal norm. Just because seeking a slender body is the societal norm does not make it right. How to respect your body. Think of respecting your body in two ways. First, by making it comfortable. And second, by meeting its basic needs. You deserve to be comfortable. You deserve to get your basic needs met. Or the more miserable you feel, the more miserable you'll be. Consider these basic premises of body respect. My body deserves to be fed. My body deserves to be treated with dignity. My body deserves to be dressed comfortably and in the manner to which I am accustomed. My body deserves to be touched affectionately and with respect. My body deserves to move comfortably. Let's explore how you can offer more respect to your body and to yourself. It's an easy concept to understand, but far more difficult to implement. The following ideas and tools have helped our clients begin a new relationship with their bodies. Getting comfortable. Let's get personal here. When is the last time you bought new underwear? Don't laugh. All too often we have clients who feel that they don't deserve new underwear, let alone new clothes, until they reach a certain weight or clothing size. Think about what that means at a basic level. Wearing panties, a bra, or briefs that are constantly pinching or riding up is highly uncomfortable. How can you be comfortable in your body when you have an unpleasant reminder constantly binding your body? How can you be at ease when your body is constantly pinched and squeezed by poorly fitting garments? Even an old car still needs a new set of tires. While initially you may snicker at the simplicity of changing your underwear, it's had a significant impact on many of our clients. I just had a baby a few months ago. My maternity underwear was laughably big, but my regular panties fit too snugly. They were a constant reminder that I was too big. I felt miserable until I invested in underwear that fit. The funny thing is that I didn't want to spend the money, even though I had shelled out plenty on a weight loss program that did not work. I was amazed at how a simple act made such a difference in feeling better about myself. Cassandra was in her 50s and hadn't bought new bras in years. The ones she had were of very high quality and quite expensive, so they lasted. Sadly, the underwires in her bras were jabbing and scarring her, but she didn't feel she deserved to buy new bras until she lost weight. Yet every day she was miserable. Her first step toward respecting her body was buying new bras and tights. She learned that wearing a tortuously tight undergarment would not make the process happen any quicker. When she was more relaxed in her underwear, she was able to be more relaxed about her eating. The comfort principle goes beyond undergarments. How you dress can be a step toward a newfound respect for your body. We are not saying to be a slave to the fashion industry, however. Rather, dress in the manner in which you are accustomed. If you are used to dressing in a tailored suit ensemble, why should you stop just because your body is not where you currently want it to be? You should not have to settle for leftovers or dowdy clothes. There's nothing wrong with dressing in worn-out jeans and an oversized shirt, if that is what you are used to and are comfortable in. If, however, you prefer wearing dress pants and a casual blazer and settle for worn-out jeans, it may affect how you feel about yourself and your body. It's an issue of being consistent. All too often, weight loss programs have urged you to get rid of your fat clothes. Otherwise, they warn you are issuing an invitation for failure. By following this dictum, however, you are setting yourself up to feel uncomfortable and more body phobic. Instead, dress for your here and now body. Be comfortable. Change your body assessment tools. We have found that most of our clients who weigh themselves frequently have difficulty living in their present body. They get too worried about the numbers. Our advice? Stop weighing yourself. Remember, the scale is the tool of a chronic dieter. Also, beware of substituting a tight pair of jeans as a pseudo-scale or body assessment tool. Hanging on to a small piece of clothing and trying it on daily or weekly can equally undermine how you feel about yourself and your body. Jamie, a young account executive for a public relations firm, was doing quite well with intuitive eating. She quit dieting, honored her hunger, respected her fullness, and so forth. Jamie had also gotten rid of the scale. But she began to assess her progress by trying on a tight miniskirt. Every time she tried the skirt on, she felt bad about herself. It conveyed the message, you haven't made enough progress. You need to lose weight. Jamie eventually got rid of the skirt and her bad feelings about her body. Even a slender person will feel uncomfortable in a pair of pants that feel too tight. Quit the body check game. Most of our clients are embarrassed to admit this, but when they enter a room with other people, they play the silent game of body checking. The game of body checking revolves around the theme, how does my body compare to the rest of the crowd? Perhaps you've played this game, and maybe are not even quite aware of it. Am I the biggest one here? Who's got the best body? How does my body rate compared to the others? This can be a dangerous game, especially when played with people you don't know. We've had clients admire and envy a stranger's body shape. Oh, if I only had her body. She must work out daily. Look at her eat only low-fat food. I should be able to do that. Something is wrong with me. I need to try harder. These are big assumptions. You do not know how someone acquired her current body shape. You may not be on a level playing field. You don't know if the person is truly eating. The person may have had surgery, such as liposuction. Many suffer from an eating disorder, may have just finished a quickie diet with fast results, and so on. You can't judge the shape of someone's body and assume he or she earned it. The person may put on a false food face socially. The individual you are admiring may also be miserable in her body. Or this person could just be naturally lean, with no effort at all. In one session, Kate described a party that she had attended and how good a particular woman's body looked. Kate thought that she should be able to get those kind of results, too, if she just tried harder. Little did Kate know, however, that the acquaintance at the party was a client of mine who happened to be bulimic. Of course, Kate would never know this from me because of strict patient confidentiality. Kate had been admiring a woman with an eating disorder who was fighting for recovery. The bottom line is, you never know. Even if it was a friend or relative, you still don't know. We have worked with clients whose own spouses and roommates did not know that they had an eating disorder. Playing the body check game may lead to more dieting and more body dissatisfaction, illustrated in the case of the dueling dieters. Both Sheila and Cassie had been on their share of diets, and they silently competed in the body check game. This began to change when Sheila became an intuitive eater. Sheila had made substantial progress over 6 months, even though it was slow. Fortunately, Sheila accepted this process and was feeling good. Meanwhile, her neighbor Cassie had just finished another crash diet. Cassie was proud of her weight loss and paraded her body around. Sheila was beginning to wish her body had changed also. That night, Sheila and Cassie went out together for dinner with their husbands. Sheila ate what she wanted, had a good meal, left some food on her plate, and overall felt satisfied. Meanwhile, Cassie proudly nibbled like a bird while she preened her body and boasted how easy her current diet was. Next to Cassie, Sheila felt as if she were overeating. But she kept listening to her intuitive eater voice that told her to respect her body, that her body deserved to be fed, that she should be patient. Her voice gently reminded her that Cassie was on a path to diet destruction. The weight loss euphoria wouldn't last long. Sheila knew this all too well from her old dieting days. Sheila's private body competition with Cassie made her feel inferior about her own body and progress. Nonetheless, she continued the journey of intuitive eating. 1 month later, Cassie had gained back all her weight and was binge eating in spurts. 1 year later, Sheila was at her natural weight, and Cassie was on another diet. But Sheila had come very close to going back on a diet because of playing the body check game. Don't compromise for the big event. Whether it's a class reunion or wedding, it's natural to want to look your best at important occasions. It's a subtle form of body checking. But if you succumb to the pressure by dieting down to squeeze into that special outfit, it will only backfire. You'll only add another notch on the belt of yo-yo dieting. This time, however, it's yo-yo dieting with a cause. Remember, there will always be important occasions in your life. One particular client was attending the Grammy Awards because her husband was up for an award. Of course, she wanted to look not just good, but great. It became clear, however, that she would not be at her ideal body weight for this prestigious event. She was feeling desperate and considered a quick fast to get her weight down. She was asked, "When will the dieting stop?" There will always be an important award or event, always a legitimate reason to diet. At that moment, she saw the future futility of crash diets triggered by competitive body checking. She decided to respect her current body. She kept her usual standards of dress and wore a custom-made outfit. This time, however, the outfit was designed for her here-and-now body. She did not have to squeeze into a gown and worry about every move she made. She still maintained her other routine standards, stylish hairdo, glittery accessories, and so forth. The only thing different was that this time she felt comfortable rather than self-conscious. It's all too easy to cross over into the dieting mentality if you rationalize that the specialness of an event makes it okay to diet. The more you exert pressure on yourself to be a certain body size, the more you are bound to create problems. Jessie would always panic when a special occasion arose, whether it was a wedding or her company's annual awards banquet, when she had to give a keynote speech. First, she would worry about what to wear, which would lead her on an intense shopping foray. Eventually, she would buy a stunning dress that was just a little too small. Jessie always shopped for her future body, rather than her here-and-now body. But she knew she could make weight for the big day, just like a boxer weighing in for the big fight. As the big day drew near, Jessie would feel more pressure. She'd try her dress on daily and chastise herself for not fitting into it. Then the meal skipping would begin. On the big day itself, Jessie would allow herself a light breakfast. She would forego eating the rest of the day to make sure she looked good and fit into her dress. Yes, the dress would fit. But by the time Jessie reached her destination, she would invariably overeat, discreetly, of course, at the special function. Her body was famished, and she'd rationalize that she earned it. But by the end of the night, her overfull stomach would remind her she was too big. She'd spend the event worrying about her body rather than having a good time. How much time and energy have you spent getting your body ready for the big event? What if the energy was directed on recognizing your inner qualities, such as wit, intelligence, or listening ability? What if you came prepared for a function by spending your time thinking of ways to engage in meaningful conversation or getting to know someone new? You'd probably have a better time. Gladys almost skipped her 20-year class reunion because she was too big and had nothing to wear. She could not bear the thought of shopping for a larger dress size. Eventually, Gladys decided to put her body worries aside and attend her reunion. Instead of worrying about her body, Gladys focused on finding out what her chums had been doing over the years. She even danced the night away with old friends. She had not danced in years. Gladys's reunion experience had far exceeded her expectations. She found her old self, the witty and charming person that loved to have fun and dance. Over the years, Gladys's private body war had only served to isolate her and keep her from doing the activities she enjoyed. The sad irony is that Gladys came so close to avoiding her reunion because her body was not ready for the big event. It might have taken Gladys a lot longer to rediscover her wonderful self. Stop body bashing. Every time you focus on your imperfect body parts, it creates more self-consciousness and body worry. It's difficult to respect your body when you are constantly chastising yourself for looking the wrong way. How often do you have these kinds of thoughts? I hate my thighs. My arms are too fat and wobbly. My butt is disgusting. I hate my double chin. My stomach is gross. Many of our clients are surprised at how often they degrade their bodies in one day. How many times a day do you chide yourself about your body? Try keeping count for a day or a few hours. It is surprising how often you can be triggered to worry about your body, whether it's a quick glimpse in a store window reflection or passing a mirror. Each disparaging thought lands another nail in the coffin of body dissatisfaction. Surrounding yourself with these body thoughts will only make you more unhappy and frustrated. It can also bleed over into how you feel about yourself in general. Instead of focusing on what you don't like about your body, find parts of your body that you like, or at least tolerate. Start simply. Perhaps you like your eyes, or smile. We've had clients who could find only one body part that they did not dislike, such as their wrist or ankle. That's okay. It's a beginning. Every time you catch a maligning body thought, disarm it. Replace it with a kind body statement that you believe, such as, I like my smile. Instead of, my puffy jowls are disgusting, replace with this positive statement. I like my hair. Instead of, my thighs are too big, replace with this positive statement. I like my muscular calves. If you find saying that you like some part of your body is too difficult, try respectful statements. Instead of, I can't stand my cellulite dimpled legs, replace with this respectful statement. I'm lucky I have legs that can move my body. Instead of, my body is so out of shape it's horrible, replace with this respectful statement. My body got me to school. I've been supporting my family while finishing my degree, so it was hard to work out optimally. Don't engage in fat talk. Fat talk is a public form of body bashing in which you participate in conversations disparaging your own body or the bodies of others. Studies show that refraining from this type of discussion is helpful in reducing body dissatisfaction, dieting, and eating disorder symptoms. Respect body diversity, especially yours. It's ironic that we are celebrating cultural diversity, but as a culture, we still have trouble with the idea of body diversity. We come in all shapes and sizes, yet we somehow expect that we should all be one size fits all, as long as it's thin. As long as we feed into this cultural stigma, it will be a long time before societal norms will change into a healthy acceptance of body diversity. There are many factors that contribute to obesity, including genetics, activity level, and nutrition. You cannot assume, for example, that just because someone is overweight, he or she earned every ounce with a spoon in one hand and a fork in the other. Several studies have documented that obese people do not necessarily eat more than their lean counterparts. Yes, there are compulsive eaters. Yes, there are those who are not active. But we cannot assume that someone with a large body overeats and does not move. Many classic studies on twins have shown that genetics plays a powerful role in determining body build. Obesity is still the last bastion where overt prejudice exists. Some call it weightism, others call it fatism. But by any name, there is the prejudice against people with bigger body sizes. Today, it would be unconscionable to make a racial slur, yet body size slurs abound. When you see a big person on the street, do you cast judgment and disdain? If you are that harsh on a stranger, how can you create a kinder environment for yourself? If you have trouble being kind and respectful to your body, perhaps you can begin with others. A scientific review by Yale's Red Center for Food Policy and Obesity shows that weight stigma has serious medical and psychological consequences. Weight bias creates shame, the impact of which creates an environment in which an overweight person is more likely to delay medical care and to seek preventive health care services. Beware of stereotyping overweight people. Remember that fat people are not any less intelligent, capable, well-adjusted, or more gluttonous than thin people. Try beginning with a place of neutrality and compassion. Check your body bias at the door. While we have spent a great deal of time and many words on respecting bigger body sizes, it's important to recognize that some people are naturally born with a leaner body type, although they are in the minority. Similarly, we cannot assume that because someone is slender, they have an eating disorder or are obsessed with dieting. Be realistic. If maintaining or obtaining your weight requires living on rice cakes and water while exercising for hours, that's a glaring clue that your goal is not realistic. or that you have an eating disorder. If your parents are extremely heavy, chances are you will never be model thin. Remember, genetics are a strong determinant of body size.